Hey, y'all. Timber Football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Timothy Preston. You guys listen to the Hornscast Show, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we're going to be going over the future and the past as we give letter grades for the first half of the season. Tim, as a teacher, you should be pretty good with this one. And then take a look at the start of Big 12 play as that happens today as Texas takes on Baylor and then OU in a few days. Then just take a wide look at the Big 12. Who are the teams to watch out for and what should Texas Longhorns expect out of the Longhorns in conference play? So, boys, I know that there were some games that happened between now and the last show.
I don't think so.
Wait.
Huh.
No.
Weird. Like the games I played with my relatives over the holiday break?
Yeah, that's what I was more talking about. There's this really fun game on the Xbox called Jackbox Party Pack, which is great to play with your relatives over, winter break and whatnot. So, I mean, that's really the games I was talking about. Were y'all thinking of other things or?
Nope.
My family likes Rummikub, and then we also like Sequence, it's called. Those are fun.
I have had you pegged for a guy who likes Settlers of Catan.
No, that shit takes way too long. Like, I like games that take, like, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that. That's more my
style.
Either
y'all play Monopoly with your families?
Not anymore.
Monopoly Junior?
Not since Nana lost her eye to the little dog.
Look, Dad has been in real estate for 40-plus years. He's merciless at that game. I remember being, like, 8 years old, and he would... You know, he'd offer me like $600 for a property, and I thought that was great until he started putting hotels on every fucking thing. So, we don't play that anymore. We don't play that. We don't play Risk because we don't want to fight. Those are the games we don't play.
Well, you guys are both smarter than me, like just in general, but you're aware of how to win Monopoly, yes?
Yeah, no, now.
Right, because there's a finite number of houses and hotels. So right. Any single time you can ever put a hotel on, you do it because those are finite.
So you just, yeah, no, I get it now. The problem was when I was 8, I was like, hell yeah, give me $500 for Baltic Avenue. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, not too long later, it's like, why I only have 4 properties?
Well, because the key is the hotels. I don't know if you heard me earlier. But that,
yeah, I didn't.
No,
Tim, what's the key?
They're finite. The hotels are.
Oh, okay.
So put them on there.
I did get my girlfriend playing Tetris Effect, which is kind of fun because she's not very good at it, but she really likes it. So it's good spectator viewing of just being like, I don't know why you put this is not going to last long.
You know, actually, I do remember there were some games that happened in the past. It was the entire out of conference schedule. So let's go ahead and take a look at Texas's...
Minus LSU.
Yeah, minus LSU. But let's go ahead and take a look at Texas's overall performance in the first half of this season. Taking into account expectations, let's give this team some letter grades. Kind of give it a little sliding scale of what we thought they should have done and where they ended up. So I'm going to throw a category y'all's way. Y'all are going to give it a letter grade and argue your case. Sound good?
Of course, man. You got it.
It's happening, Johnny. I don't give a crap what you say anymore.
Great job, Will.
I've learned to completely disregard anything you say.
That's probably wise.
Yeah. First category here. What?
I love you, Will.
Aw, Tim. That's the flu medicine talking.
All right. Pumpkin pie haircutted freak.
The first category we have here is offensive game planning and execution. What were you expecting? How did Texas do? Give me a letter grade here.
Yeah, I'm going to say a solid, super solid C. I could be convinced to a C minus. I don't think I could be convinced higher than a C. Where we've been good, we've been pretty good. We've been relatively efficient inside. We have been maybe even a little bit better than I was nervous that we would be. As far as shooting from three, we haven't been bad from there in comparison to some previous years. Where we've been bad, we've been monumentally bad. We are terrible at getting to the free throw line, which we talked about at the beginning of the season. We're slower than I would have thought that we would be at the beginning of the season. We still take too many threes. So I think for a team like us that has some of our athletes and for a team that kind of wants to get up and down as much as I think that we probably could or maybe should, we've struggled in those places where I think we could have maximized our effectiveness. So I would say a C just because there's been some things that we've been good at, but arguably some things that we've been just as bad at. So
yeah, I think if I'm putting together a wish list for whoever the next coach is, if and when that day comes, playing faster than a glacier would be probably number one on my list. So I'm with you. I wish, you know, we get all of these supposedly superior athletes and then decide to play a slow half court set. So not happy.
We sure do. We sure do.
I'm gonna go with a C as well, and I think I'm doing that in part because some games it's a A minus or a B, and some games it's a D or an F, and so I'm just sort of averaging it out because they've been so up and down that it probably averages out to somewhere in the C range. I also agree that the execution has been uneven. They don't reliably get to the paint to start the offense through pick and roll drives and whatnot. So I'm going to have to say a C because, like, I'm not so much concerned about the amount of threes as I am the quality of the threes. And the quality has also varied on that. So, yeah, I have concerns about this offense's structure in that it is fine to want to push pace east and west, you know, pass the ball around to try and get to openings. But if you're not forcing the defense to move when you're passing it around, then you're not really doing anything. So it doesn't really matter how quickly you pass that ball back and forth if the defense gets to stay where they're at. So I don't know why they went this way as opposed to what they did last year. The results have been very mixed, so yeah, I'll go with the C on that side.
To that effect, real quick, I would agree. I think that we have an offense so far this year, particularly when you have our starting five or our starting five minus one plus Andrew Jones, we see a lot of three-man action where two of our guys, usually Jace and Andrew or Jace and Matt or Andrew and Matt or whatever it might be, who just kind of get fixed to corners. And we see this three-man game with, like, Jericho and Matt or Jericho and Courtney and then Gerald or whoever it might be at the four. And those three guys are interchanging and moving a lot. And the other two guys, as we said, stay fixed, which is fine if you have someone that can get to the lane at will. Like, that makes sense if you have a point guard or a combo guard that can get in the lane whenever they want to, but we just don't. Like, I think maybe Matt could, but, you know, his strength isn't really like breaking someone down and like getting shots up or points into the paint. And yet we're playing that offense. We're playing as if we have guys that can do that consistently, and Jace really can't. Andrew probably can't. Courtney is so hit or miss. Matt's almost unselfish to a fault, but even, you know, even he is not wonderful at that. So why are we playing this?
Jace Fabris is sneaky good at it.
Against shitty teams or like twice a game, but you can't build an offense around two times a game with him doing that. And then against good teams, like he shot, what was he, like 1-for-6 against Providence? You know, so it just feels like it seems like they've built this offense this year as if it's a best case scenario that we have like a couple of dominant players, and we have no dominant players. Even in Matt's terrific play all year, he's not like dominant on that end. He's not. What makes him great is his all around game. He's a good passer. He's a very good defender. He's been a very good shooter. He's been a good ball handler, but he's not like transcendent at those things at this point. And it seems like our offense is built around that idea, and that's just not what it's been. So, I find a lot of fault with plenty of things this year, but offensively, it just feels like we're kind of pie in the sky, but that's not our actual reality.
Who is Providence? Is that a person?
Is that
math?
Is that like
Is that like a
toaster? Pancreas.
It's a movie with Kate Beckinsale, I want to say.
Oh, well, now you have my attention. Okay, yeah.
Smoke show.
Is that a country? All right.
Is that a euphemism?
Other side. Other side. Take a look at the defense here. Give me your letter grade and your case for that letter grade for the defensive game plan and execution. What are y'all's thoughts on what happened in the first half of the season and how they executed it?
So I think I'm going to give this one a B because I think that
easy grader.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Take Uncle Johnny's class, kids.
Yeah. Flattery will get you all sorts of letter grades. Yeah. I mean, I think if you listen to what they said, their goals were, contested twos. Like, they wanted to run people off the 3-point line and they wanted to force them into contested twos. Well, they are top 15 in the country in allowing 3-point attempts as a percentage of field goal attempts. Like, they allow less than 30% of the shots against them to be threes. So they're running people off the line. So they're doing that part well. They, you know, you look at some of Jericho's numbers and, you know, some of the other guys' numbers that in terms of blocks and that sort of thing, they're doing pretty well. Like, the issues with this team are not on the defensive end, really. I mean, they have issues on the defensive end, but they are minor compared to sort of the problems that Tim laid out on the offensive end. There's still definitely, improvement that could be had there, so maybe call it a B minus. Like, they could be better at not fouling, for example. They could be more aggressive in terms of going after steals. They allow a lot of offensive rebounds, which is probably worth knocking them down to a B minus at least. So I guess I'll call. I've talked myself into a B minus C plus at this point as I sort of break it down. I think really what. Conceptually, what I wanted to give them credit for is the fact that they are running people off the 3-point line, which is a stated goal of theirs. But they do have other places they need to work on.
Yeah, I guess I actually would go lower for their defense than I would for their offense right now. And I know that sounds a little silly, but here's my basis for that.
Is it a relative to expectation thing?
No, actually not. I think there's two areas that we have seen our metrics inflated because of our relatively weak non-conference schedule. The first is our record, and the second is our defensive metrics. If you look at our games against Purdue, Georgetown, and Providence, the only three games that really kind of matter at this point, like Georgetown, Purdue, and then there was another team in there somewhere.
Oh, okay. Like Central Michigan?
Right. All three of those teams averaged, like, we're at a point per possession, every one of them. All three of those teams beat us on the glass. All three of those teams shot a relatively high 3-point percentage, or at least higher than their average. So the three teams that could match us with height, length, and athleticism hurt us pretty significantly. And the teams that couldn't, we've looked okay against. But that's, if you can say one thing about the Big 12 over the last 5 or 6 years, is that this is a league, and this is a conference that they can throw players at you no matter where you go. I mean, even TCU, which is, you know, came into the season with a bunch of question marks, like, who's their best player? Desmond Bane, right? So there's a lengthy guy that can put the ball on the floor, that can really shoot from three. So, and guys like that have hurt us. And I don't think that we brought in Yaklich to come in and say, oh, can you turn Central Michigan into a bad or poor shooting second half team? You bet I can. You're hired. Like, no, he's in here to take advantage of, like, the good teams that we play. We don't want to be, top 40 or 50 defensively. We want to be top 10 or 15. And that's just, not only has that not happened, but it's really not happened against the better teams we've played. So perhaps I'm overselling those three games, and we're actually going to prove that the numbers that we've put up so far are legit. but I'm really concerned that in fact we are not good defensively. That this is a team that's actually got a lot of issues. We don't know how to guard the ball screen. We don't box out well. We don't defensive rebound well. We put teams on the foul line too many times. We switch at awkward times. We're, you know, like we don't have really stand up individual defenders. Like the numbers back up what Johnny says, but I'm nervous that once the teams that we play really kick up a notch, that we're going to see those issues really be exacerbated.
So, I think one thing to Tim's point is that I know I sold the idea of Jaklic coming here as being a big defensive improvement because his defensive reputation has been sterling.
Hey, guilty as charged, my guy. Guilty, me too.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's... I think it was pretty common. I mean, I'll own it.
Again, this is y'all's fault.
Yeah, it is. I think the defense has definitely underperformed relative to what my expectations were between Shaka and Jaklic. I mean, those are two of the best defensive minds in college basketball, and they have not created some sort of elite defense to this point. Yeah, I think they've underperformed relative to expectations. I wonder if maybe my expectations were too high. But given past history of what Jaklic has done at Michigan and elsewhere, it didn't seem like it was too high at the time. I also am a little bit... Like, it's not that I disagree with Tim. It's that this is sort of
it's
a problem.
It's that Tim's wrong. And he should feel bad.
Yes. I mean, he does feel bad. He looks terrible. Like, I think he's about to die. He's at least close to a coma. When you have a non-conference schedule that's as shit as this one is, you have limited sample sizes of, like, legit teams, right? You have three teams that are, high major teams, right? And the rest are, I mean, I guess A&M technically qualifies as a high major team.
Yeah,
but not
two
really
in name
year.
Only.
Yeah.
Right, Cal yeah. And A&M, right.
And so it's sort of difficult to extrapolate based on three games out of 12 because there are, one bad game can really throw things off or, you know, whatever, right? Like it's such a small sample size that Tim could be absolutely accurate, but there's such limited data that it's hard to generalize for me at least. So I think Tim is probably onto something, and I have a bad feeling after Saturday, we're all going to freak out because we'll have a fourth data point and it's likely to be pretty fucking terrible. So we'll see, right? But like it's...
Whoa, Johnny. That's a spoiler for later in the episode.
All right,
come on.
Don't, yeah,
don't give
sorry.
Away the good stuff yet.
Yeah, but, yeah, hey, potentially. Or it could be a win. Who knows? So
stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned for my shocking prediction. Fucking this team,
good,
man.
Good.
This fucking good. Team. All right. Next category.
Moving on.
All right. So on that note, give me a letter grade and argue your case for taking care of the teams that they need to.
Well, I gave this one a C- because I felt like they should have taken care of Georgetown. There are some exigent circumstances there, I guess, given that Georgetown's been through a lot of roster upheaval and they seem to have found gold for approximately 1 month and then shit the bed entirely. And then I'm not surprised they lost to Providence. I'm surprised they lost that much to Providence. But yeah. That's Providence then went and took a shit on Georgetown, which is like a double shit on Texas. I don't know how that works exactly. I mean, other than that, they beat the teams they were supposed to beat, right? And they even beat a team that they weren't necessarily supposed to beat in Purdue. Like, that one was sort of coin flip-ish, or Texas was at least a minor underdog in it. So maybe I'm being a too hard of a grade here based on the Georgetown game. I was frustrated with how some teams they did not take care of in a way that I think they should have. Like, McNeese State was entirely too close, right? And... You know, you look at the A&M game, that should have stayed a 16 to 20 point win, and then they fucked around for the last couple minutes and made it too close, even though A&M didn't seem to know whether they wanted to win that game or not. I mean, really, like, High Point, they took care of the way they were supposed to. Northern Colorado, they took care of the way they're supposed to. California, they took care of the way they should have. Prairie View,
UAB,
A&M. Yeah, it's just... all right, maybe I'll say a C, because, like, I'm probably overrating the Georgetown thing, and I'm probably more frustrated about some games than I shouldn't be, than I should be. And they did beat the crap out of High Point eventually, so I don't know. I'll call it a C.
Tim?
Yeah, C plus, B minus. I guess I'll go a little bit above Johnny.
Oh,
just because...
look at who's the easy grade now, huh?
Yeah, it's true.
Take Uncle Timmy's class.
There's no question about that. But, I mean, it feels a little... So for all the things that I don't think are right about this season, we're 10-2. We are. I mean, that's the reality right now, and I don't think that... I think if you look at the net ratings that NCAA came up with, we're like 78 or 75 or something like that, which
something
is...
like that, yeah.
That's indicative. That's legit. I don't think that Texas fans have any kind of gripe. Like, what? So we're in the 70s? Like, yep. That's exactly what it should be. But if the question is taking care of business, I mean, yeah, I think that we should have beaten Georgetown. We made them look like world beaters. We should have beaten... are we better than Providence? Maybe not. I don't know. But again, if we backpedal 2 months and you tell me at the beginning of November, like November 3rd, hey, we're going to end up 10-2, I mean, I'd have taken it. I mean, no questions asked, I'd have taken 10-2. So I guess that feels like to me, you know, just from a record standpoint, like if this is the one question you've got, Will, the early part of this, like, okay, well, the most cut and dry, 10-2 is, to say that's even a B minus seems relatively low, even though we know the context of how that happened and how we've looked in those losses. I still think that, you know, we have in some ways, if we can find our way to 9 wins in the conference, 10-2 is going to help us. Like, it just will. Or even 8 wins, that will still probably be enough, you know? So
yeah, it depends on the 8.
Yeah, no doubt, but I mean, I would have said that before. So our non-conference suggests that we're going to win at Kansas, and then we're going to lose badly at TCU and like drop a game at home to Iowa State or something like that, right? If this is kind of what it looks like, but... I don't know. So yeah, 10-2 is 10-2, and so I guess from that standpoint, I'll say C plus or B minus. But I don't feel great about that.
I mean, would you take a win at Kansas for a loss at home against? I mean, I don't know. Who's
yes.
If we get to 8 wins, if we get to 8 wins,
I don't give a fuck. I want to win at Kansas. Last time we won at Kansas,
1-18. That one win is to Kansas.
I will be like, how bad do you fucking Jayhawks feel now, right? Like, we're the reason you're a 2 seed. Suck it. I think here's the thing: 10-2 is not bad. And part of me is freaking out for, you know, sort of analytics reasons rather than record reasons. I think if that 10-2
and
was,
eyeball reasons.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah. I think if that 10-2 was a win against Georgetown and a loss against Duke, as opposed to a loss against Georgetown and a win against Cal, I would feel a lot better about things right now because that's a more expected 10-2, right?
Right.
But it's, I don't know. Yeah, it's things. Yeah, great.
If Georgetown didn't exist, or if we lose to Georgetown, beat Cal, and then beat a team in the last 2 weeks that shall be unnamed, I don't know. If either the Georgetown or Providence game was switched around, I think that we'd all feel different about it. But tough to say.
Let's talk about the next category here. The next category here is play from the front court. So the big guys. Give me your letter grade for the big guys and why it is so damn low.
So my grade is going to be an A- for Jericho. and a D for everybody else.
What does that average out to?
I don't know. Probably like a
D plus.
Something. Yeah, because it's what, like three of them versus one. So yeah, Jericho's the curve wrecker or whatever. I don't know. It's Jericho has been great. He has done what you needed him to do. He has been everything you needed him to be. He's not been perfect. Obviously, it would be nice if he hit a few more free throws. You know, he's done a good job for the most part of staying out of foul trouble. He's been a good rebounder. He has been pretty good in the pick and roll game. He's even established post position some. Not that anybody fucking feeds him the ball when he establishes it. He's been like, I have very few complaints about Jericho Sims. He has been arguably the second best player on the team behind Matt Coleman. Behind him is a bag of garbage that is on fire. That's pretty much like Will Baker might as well not have hands. Like, I don't know what he's doing with them. He's not using them to score or defend. So maybe he could donate them to a local homeless shelter and they could make sandwiches. I don't know. Gerald has had exactly one great game and then just been a real big up and down, whatever. I don't know what to say about him. Kamaka beat up on a team that was shitty as hell and otherwise has played like 20 minutes this entire season. Who else?
Royce,
who is the button masher of the Street Fighter world. He has three offensive moves and all of them generate fouls or turnovers. He's pretty good at rebounding, and he's pretty good at fouling. I don't know. You want
don't to sell him short there? Fouling. He's quite good at fouling.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he gets like if the goal was to get five fouls as quickly as possible, he would be at least a solid B plus A minus. Kai Jones has been, he's had moments, but like they're sort of infrequent, and there's, you know,
he's an inconsistent freshman.
He's very raw, and like I still like the guy. I think he's got a ton of potential, but he's still extremely raw. So. Yeah, it's like Jericho Sims and the tag team of midgets. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like, other than Jericho, it has been bad.
Whew, yep. Coming in hot. Yeah, I think that when we put in Kamaka against High Point, it was a couple of things. I mean, Shaka spoke at length about how Kamaka is an energy bringer and how Kamaka has kind of gotten over himself and prayed really hard and just like, you know, puts Texas first, they keep on talking about. And that's probably true. I like Kamaka's game. You know, we said before the season, like I had hoped that Kamaka would be that starter at the four, or at least I was comfortable with him being the starter at the four. And so to have Texas play pretty well against a crappy team with him there, it made sense. Who would you say, Johnny, has been the best feeder of the post from the high wing up to right now?
I'm going to default to Matt Coleman.
I'm going to say Gerald. Like, I actually think it's been Gerald. Like, the guy who's found the low block the most consistently, I think, has been Gerald. Maybe. But, like, then you, like, compound all the other things that Gerald has done poorly and say, like, well, is that his number one thing? But it was interesting.
Now, his number one thing is this slow curl to the basket after he holds the ball for 3 seconds.
Yeah, this is to say.
It's like a half pump fake and then a slow curl to the basket where he generates a charge or something.
It's like that Saturday Night Live bit where like guys are slowly fake bounce passing and then chest passing to the side. Jericho, to say he's been great, and I think Johnny is like, he's been great for sure in comparison. He's been fine. Jericho has been, you know, been everything that we probably could have asked for at this point, and maybe even a little bit more, which is to say he's probably honorable mention Big 12, maybe third team all Big 12 at this point, which is good. We'll take that. He's actually been better, Jericho has, as far as creating his own offense when he has gotten some of those low post touches. He's pretty comfortable creating shots around the rim. He uses elevation very well. He's also had sections where he can't stay on the floor. And when he's not on the floor, as Johnny has very eloquently put it, we're just like, oh shit, what do we do? Like, to the point where I want to say there were multiple minutes against Providence where we had Baker and Kai Jones on the floor together. And it's just like, just fuck it. Like, well, let's see what happens.
There was a definite, like, throwing shit against a wall period.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But even, like, from that standpoint, you know, when Will has looked decent this year.
It's all year because I look great at all times.
Right. When Will Bazer has looked good in the low block, it's just right in their fucking face. But
That's where I'm the best.
Yeah, absolutely. It's where you're really most comfortable. But...
It's more like I'm least comfortable everywhere.
I'm most
comfortable on the bench, just watching.
Yeah. The bench behind the bench is that second row back there, looking nice and being well dressed, but not really actually doing anything.
I'm most comfortable in row 35.
Yeah. I would say maybe D or D minus. I don't think Jericho being quite good is enough to make us overlook the bullshit that has been our 2 through 5 on the interior this year. I just don't think so, because Jericho Sims hasn't been transcendent. He hasn't been like amazing, and not only that, but the other guys have played so sparingly or so intermittently that they don't really like who would you say should be our second true big man at this point? Did Kamaka show enough? No. Has Roy shown enough? No. Do you feel comfortable with Kai or with Will? Absolutely not. Does Gerald deserve that? I mean, clearly not at this point. I mean, like, even then, Kamaka did enough stuff against High Point that he did what we wanted Gerald to do before the season. Okay, Gerald, space the floor, attack the glass, find some cutting lanes, screen well, pop well, and like, he can't even do that. And then, so Kamaka kind of does it against High Point. Like, Kamaka, yes. All right, like that shouldn't be enough. One game against a bullshit team should not like turn us against everyone else. But I mean, other than Royce, against who did Royce look really good against? He had that one game where he was like 8-12 or whatever. Like, he had 12 rebounds or 13 rebounds against somebody. I don't know. Otherwise,
maybe Colorado or somebody.
Yeah, like who else has even had a good game? Because I wouldn't say that Gerald's good game was on the interior. He was still kind of a perimeter player against Purdue. I'm sorry that I'm rambling and kind of old man crotchety,
no,
whatever.
The thing is, I wish I would have been doing this the entire segment, but I would say, Tim, you win this round. This is the category you win. I'm going to go back, actually. Offensive game plan and execution. What was the general? I think
right,
you
Tim
both
that
said
one.
The
Tim
same thing.
Won that one, yeah.
Defensive game plan and execution.
I said D or D plus. Johnny said C plus.
I'm going to say I won the defensive one just because I rambled more. And I feel like by volume, I won. Like, just volume.
Johnny yelled
words.
The loudest. And in today's society, that's how you win arguments.
I got to take.
So, taking care of teams they needed to. What were the grades y'all gave?
I said B minus. Johnny said, I think C.
C minus.
C minus. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say both of y'all, I give it a C plus. So, Johnny, you win by Price is Right rules.
Curse. So I'm getting smoked today. Jeez.
Yeah, it seems like it. Sam, I'll give you the offensive game planning. So y'all are tied right now.
This bothers me because I felt like I really came with something for the front court grades. Like,
yeah, I mean,
like,
no,
maybe
I
Tim
really...
was more accurate on the grade, but I definitely was more colorful.
I don't know. Tim's rant was pretty good. It was pretty ranty. I liked it.
Did he mention midgets even once? No.
That's true. Tim, can you fit midgets into your...
Oh, he can fit midgets anywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
Play from the backcourt. Let's go ahead and talk about that. Johnny, no sexual innuendos, because that was way too easy. I set you up way too easy. That doesn't count. Play from the backcourt. Give me y'all's letter grades and why. Tim, you won the last round. You get to go first this time.
It's like golf rules, I guess.
Sheesh. This, to me, is the toughest one, because even more than offensive system or defensive system, we have metrics both ways, I still think with those two standpoints, like, it's not as crest and trough as our backcourt has been. Like, I just... Matt's been, I think, inarguably our best player. But for all the good things Andrew has done, he really struggles getting defensive rebounds. For all the good things that Jace has done, he is still prone to those crappy games. For all the hope and dreams we had about Courtney Ramey, he looks unready or unwilling or incapable or all of those things kind of balled into one to really take that next step. And you know, it just, we get almost nothing from Donovan Williams. We've gotten truly nothing from Brock Cunningham. So, I mean, is our strength our backcourt? No question. Do I think that if we're going to win some games against some tough teams over the stretch of the conference schedule, that because of the backcourt? Yeah. But man, it's just, they just, our front court issues would not be so glaring if our backcourt was what I thought maybe it could be at the beginning of the season. But like a lot of stuff this year, it just hasn't been. So I guess I would probably say for our backcourt, I'll go B minus. That seems low. Maybe B. Maybe B. But in that, like, right in that lower area, Matt's been terrific. But I hesitate to put any of Andrew, Courtney, or Jace above that C-plus level. And I think that they, because of Matt's tendency to be a secondary ball handler or a secondary playmaker by allowing Courtney to take it from up top or by giving Andrew a lot more freedom, I don't think you can take Matt's performances and say that he's been good enough to pull up the entirety of that squad. And when we've struggled, Andrew has looked slow. Courtney has looked slow and inefficient. Jace has still had huge stretches of what the hell. And because of that, I just don't think you can say that we're much better than that B minus, maybe low B area.
I wasn't listening to any of that, but I'm sure my points are going to be better. I went with B, and this is sort of a B with Matt Coleman dragging everyone else along. This is sort of a lesser version of Jericho Sims. Coleman has been he's been the best player on the team. He has been the best ball handler. He drives the lane better than any of the rest of them thus far this season. His 3-point shooting is ridiculous, in part because he doesn't really take bad threes ever. That's sort of an underrated reason why he is making so many threes, is that he is taking, like, he's only taking the open threes. He's not forcing threes, right? As opposed to, say, the first half of Courtney Ramey's season. Courtney Ramey is sort of he's a really interesting dichotomy in that the first six games of the season, he was shooting 13% from three, and the last six games, he shot 40% from three. So I'm inclined to think the last half is more accurate, given that he was a 40% three-point shooter last year. But we'll see, right? His problems are more ones along the lines of not finishing at the rim well, which seems weird for a dude who plays as tough as he does to not be able to nail those layups like he should be able to. Jace is very up and down. I think you know within the first 5 or 10 minutes of a game whether or not Jace is going to have a good game, because if he hits his first couple threes, he's probably going to hit six more. But if he misses his first couple, it's going to be a 1-for-6 or 2-for-8 sort of night. And his 3-point shot selection is, you know, some days it's good, some days it's not. And I like the fact that he drove a couple times. He'd pump fake and drive a couple times in the last couple games. I want him to do that a little more, just so that it's there and it forces teams to hesitate a touch. Andrew is... I kind of want to call him found money this year, just because when you get a guy coming back from cancer, like, what can you really expect, right? It's good that he is shooting threes as well as he is. He is not shooting them as well as he did before he got sick. I don't want him driving into the lane if I can possibly help it, because he's a turnover machine when he gets inside the paint. And for that matter, when he's in transition, if he's the ball handler, he also turns the ball over a lot. So I guess we're sort of, Tim and I end up being in sort of the same area of this B, B minus range, because the group is not bad. They're not as good as they could be. But if you get, at, you know, three out of the four going in the same game, they can beat anybody, right? If you get all four of them going, they're going to beat any team in the country. But how often is that going to happen?
All right, so I'm going to call this one a draw. And this will be the tiebreaker here, and it's going to be rapid fire because we're 40 minutes in. Who was the best player during the out-of-conference schedule?
Matt Coleman, yeah.
So you have to pick somebody else, Tim, because Johnny said Matt Coleman first.
Cat Molman.
The answer was Drayton Whiteside.
Oh, curses.
Sorry, you're both wrong.
Oh, fuck. Should have known.
I was wrong last. I was wrong last. He was wrong first.
That's true.
Tim
wins.
Woohoo!
Tim was more wrong, therefore he wins.
Wait.
Tim was wrong last.
That's right.
Tim was wrong last, and he gave an imaginary human, so therefore he wins.
Yes, exactly. All right, let's talk about the start of Big 12 play here, because that's what's happening literally today. Yay!
Wait.
What?
No.
No?
Let's not do that.
Okay, the end.
Yeah, I'd rather spend the next 15 minutes or so telling Tim how much the new Star Wars was trash.
Yeah, you won't get any...
Let's not get into that. Let's talk about something that will actually be more enjoyable to listen to that. Let's talk about Big 12 play.
No, I don't want to. No, thank you.
All right, so real quick.
All right, Emperor Palpatine talk it is. There we go.
Why is he back? How is he back? This is ridiculous. Sorry.
You know this means he fucked, right?
Well, she fucked. No question about that. She fucked. Sorry, Will.
Who are the teams to watch out for in the Big 12?
A little place called Kansas. Yeah, watch out for Kansas.
Yeah.
If I have a vote for, and I know this sounds really silly, but if I have a vote for a team that I think could, like my dark horse for second, I actually think Oklahoma State could be that team. They've looked really good when they've had all their players there. But otherwise, if it's not that, like, I really think this, like, when you've watched the Big 12 programs this season, the hierarchy seems to be legit. You know, Kansas, Baylor, I hate it, but probably Tech. And then that, you know, that weird conglomerate of us, OU, Oklahoma State, TCU, West Virginia, you know, we'll see. But I do think that, like, right now, what people think about the Big 12 is probably true.
So, Johnny, what do you think of that standing right there? Do you agree with that sort of that ordering of teams, or is there something else that you would, you know, is there some way you would shake that up?
I'm a little different. I mean, I think we both agree that Kansas is the class of the Big 12. I think we both agree that Baylor is probably second. And there's probably somewhat of a gap between second and third. I'm kind of feeling West Virginia at this point for third. Not that they don't have questions, but I don't think anyone 3 through 9 is without questions.
Right.
Oklahoma State could jump up into that discussion, depending on how they play the rest of the way. I still am sort of pleasantly surprised by how West Virginia started. They're defending really well, and they are getting good enough play from their point guards that they've sort of re-energized their fan base, and, you know, going into Morgantown is going to be hell again.
And against a team like us where they can just punch us in the mouth on the interior, like, we're gonna that's gonna be rough against their big man.
I mean, I think it's with West Virginia, it's the same problem they always have, is what are the refs gonna call, right?
Because
if West Virginia gets refs who are going to call contact, they're gonna have a hard time. I mean, that's been the way they've been for forever. So will they call that, won't they call that, that's sort of, you know, that's a big piece. Other than that, yeah, I think 4 through 9 are a big jumble of teams that maybe they separate out a little bit. Like, maybe Tech starts to separate itself a little bit. But otherwise, they're all teams with flaws, all teams that could beat each other in a given night, all teams that can be beaten in a given night. Kansas State seems to be pulling up the rear at this point. They're just not very good thus far. So maybe there's a space between them and as the 10th seed. But yeah, I think Texas could end up anywhere between 4 through 9. It wouldn't surprise me. Maybe if they get all their shit together, they end up third, but that seems kind of unlikely at this point.
Who is y'all's Big 12 player of the year at the end of the year? Give me your prediction now after half a season. Who is it?
It's got to be Dotson from Kansas, probably. Like, that seems like the easy bet. Because right now he's right in the thick of Pomeroy's national player of the year race. So seems like he would be the leading candidate.
Yeah, I agree. I really like Likely. He plays the game.
He's Likely the guy that you like the most.
He plays really hard. He's very fast. He has, you know, he's really improved his skills from last year to this year. So he's a guy that I think honestly would be, you know, hats off to Boynton. Like, there's a lot of guys on Oklahoma State's team that I think seem like Shaka Smart players, but instead of with us, they're at Oklahoma State. So Dotson's the call. I don't think that's a question. But like, if something were to happen to sneak up, I could see him. I'm trying to remember the big guy's name from West Virginia right now. Sorry,
Deshiwi.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, just because Culver, right? Because when Culver's at his best, he's just dominant. He's just really, 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 really good. So we'll see. I think Baylor's, you know, their top four guys are all kind of at a level where they're going to all be at like 14 and a half points and 6 rebounds, you know, or whatever it might be. So they're going to take some numbers away from each other. So I doubt that any of them will stick out too much, but there's a lot of good players. No question about it. Desmond Bain, if you told me he was the player of the year, that he's going to drop 36 or 7 times during the conference season, I'd say yeah. Like, TCU could be 7-11 and he could still be the player of the year just because he might really go off that many times, I guess. But
yeah, I don't think there's anyone who is, I mean, I get your point about Bane, but I don't think there's anybody who's more integral to their team than Tyrese Halliburton. Like, when he leaves Iowa State, you know, if he goes out with like an ankle injury or something, they are in a bad way. Like, they are very dependent on him.
I guess so, but he's not really a numbers creator. Like, he's not gonna rock 22-7-5 or something like that. Like, he moves the ball well against, you know, away from the ball or like as a secondary. Paul, yeah, you're right. He's really, really good. But I think he'll struggle putting up numbers.
Yeah, no, I'm talking more about relative importance to a team.
Sure.
Right? Like, Iowa State without him is bad. Oklahoma State without Likely is also bad, but it seems like it's a little less so.
Not Florida A&M lost bad? Question
mark. Yeah, fair.
So the next two games Texas has are against Baylor and OU.
They are.
Both of them would be nice to see the other team lose. Because they're Baylor and OU. How good are each of these teams? Who are their main guys? Who are the guys that they should be watching out for here?
Baylor's a good team. They got a solid starting five. Again, Johnny and I have been talking about this for the last few weeks. They've got 4 or 5 guys that can create off the bounce. Jared Butler, Maceo Teague, Davion Mitchell. What's the Gillespie's kid? Freddie Gillespie, I want to say his name. So, they hats off to the biggest douchebag in college sports. He's put together a bunch of guys who seem to kind of mesh well together. I think that obviously he's recruited to a system quite well. Baylor has consistently over the years been a team that rebounds especially well. So if you're looking for the oh shit barometer, that would probably be it again this year. Is like, you know, how effectively can we keep things on the defensive glass in our favor, or at least close to our favor? I don't think that Baylor has a huge talent advantage over us if we play to our capability, but that's been so up and down for us. It's hard to look at that from a from what's there, what are they trying to do standpoint, both offensively and defensively, as opposed to what we do. I actually kind of hope that they throw the zone against us a lot, because I could see Andrew and Jace getting hot from deep, especially if Kamaka has a chance to shoot against the zone from deep. That's okay. Like, I like our chances if teams are going to zone us a lot. But it's been a big issue all year for us as far as like truly executing in that half court defense, half court offense, and saying like we'll create the best shots or finish possessions as capably as possible.
I have bad news for you. They play almost no zone this year. They have only played zone 5% of the time this year.
That's not true in this game I've watched them play.
They're if you go to Synergy, they play man defense 95% of the time. Which is a stark departure from Baylor, right? Like, we know them for the 1-3-1 zone. We know them for, sticking to that. And it's
right.
Having the athletes to fit that. But they are not playing much zone at all this year. They're playing a lot of man defense, which is, frankly, surprising. I was surprised when I saw that number as well. I haven't watched enough of their games to really say one way or the other, but the fact that it's even close to that is pretty striking. The other thing that bothers me, or the thing that sort of, they have three guys who shoot at least 42% from three, which is a real nice luxury to have. Fuck you, Scott Drew. I just want this game to be close. I agree that sort of the talent difference is not there, right? It's not like going into Kansas when Kansas is at its peak or anything like that. But Baylor has done a lot of really good things. I've tried talking myself into and out of this game, and every time I end up talking myself out of it. It's going to be a rough game in all likelihood. I mean, it's a tough game to start with. It's not going to Kansas tough, but it's not that far off, frankly. I mean, it's the second lowest win probability of the remaining season. The only one worse being at Kansas. So, sure. I mean, clearly it's going to be a tough game for Texas to win. And I think it would be great for Texas to pick this up beyond the obvious reasons, for the fact that they have at Baylor, Oklahoma, Kansas State, and then they have a three-game trip of a Wednesday at Oklahoma State, a Saturday with Kansas at home, and a Monday at West Virginia. So, like, if they lose to Baylor and Oklahoma, there's a good chance they start conference play like 1-5. And that's, I mean, they're not going to dig out of that hole, frankly.
Yeah.
So, these are... If Texas has aspirations to make the NCAA tournament, they probably need to be at least 9-9 in conference play, and they need to pick up an unexpected victory. I mean, you know, I was going through this a little bit earlier, and if you go by win probabilities, right? So I looked at this point in time with Texas, they are underdogs more than they are favorites in the Pomeroy as it stands tonight. They have five games where they're under 30% win probability. They got four where it's 30-39%. So that's a 9 out of the 18 games they are less than 40% win probability. So they have seven of them, though, that are sitting in that 40-60% range. And that's really where they got to make their hay. And if they can't make their hay in there, that means they got to go deeper into the ones where they're, you know, bigger underdogs for them to actually put together a campaign that will get them into March Madness, right? Because the non-conference record, I mean, if they beat LSU, that will help, but their non-conference schedule just is not enough on its own, right? So a game against Baylor, where they are 19% win probability right now, if they can somehow pull that off, that would be a big boost to their resume come March, and that would flip a lot of the other probabilities for them because it's so unexpected.
Let's take a look at the next team here, Oklahoma. What are they this year, and what should Texas fans expect against them? What should the game plan be against OU in Texas's first home conference game?
So... It's, I mean, in some ways, it's a it's an expected Long Kruger team in that their tempo is pretty fast and, you know, they try to get out and run. They play decent defense. It's not fantastic defense, but it's solid defense. What I'm surprised about is that they are not a good three-point shooting team at all. Like, they make 31.5% of their threes, which is significantly below where Texas is. I want to say it's about 100 spots below them in Pomeroy. Usually you think Oklahoma's going to have at least a couple shooters, and Brady Manick is about it at this point, honestly. Devian Harmon, who is their freshman, I don't want to call him a freshman phenom. He's been very good, but he's not a great three-point shooter. Austin Reeves has not been as good as they had hoped he would be coming from Wichita State. It is a winnable game, right? Like, it's, you know, Texas is has a 58% win probability on this one. So Texas should, you know, all things being equal, they should be slight favorites in this game. But if Oklahoma speeds them up and gets to start playing their game, then, you know, things could go sideways on Texas pretty quickly.
It could, or that could play into our hands. I guess we'll see. We'll see. I like that opportunity too. I watched almost the entire game that they played against Stanford, and Oklahoma just got burned. There was a shooter from Stanford that just went off. I'm trying to think of the other games I saw that Oklahoma played. They lost, or they didn't lose, but they had that really close game with North Texas that I saw, you know, some of that. That was the same night, I want to say, that Duke barely beat or lost to
SFA.
SFA. I guess, you know, you can't kind of lose some of the players that Oklahoma State's lost, or the Oklahoma's lost over the last couple of years, and I think just keep reloading. That's not really Kruger's MO. Like, he'll build up a team, but this year, I think that actually Oklahoma probably, in my opinion, will be one of the lower teams in the Big 12. So I like Texas's opportunity to kind of come out well. If we'll see, as Johnny says, if, you know, the guys, as always for Texas, that if you want to see if they're going to play fast, can they play fast and efficient, are still the same three as always. How does Courtney look? How does Andrew look? How does Jace look? Because we've seen Jace, when he's gotten sped up, miss a three-point shot by 6 feet. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, what the hell is that? We've seen Courtney, when he's got sped up, have 4 or 5 turnovers in a game. We've seen Andrew, when he's got sped up, like airball 8-foot shots. I actually like the idea of how Matt and Jericho can look in faster tempo games. And if those three guys for Texas also play as well as we think they can in those shots or in those opportunities, then we should look good. But like Johnny says, like, when they speed us up, do they speed us up in a way that we can play fast and still cognizant of what our strengths are, or can we not stick inside of those areas that we're, you know, pretty good? So it's such a toss up, and it's such a question of, you know, which Texas team shows up, how comfortable do we look some of those kind of weird situations where we might look good for 3 minutes and then Oklahoma will go on a 6 minute run, and then we'll look for 10 minutes and then Oklahoma will go on a 3 minute run. And it just, you know, how can we kind of counteract some of those runs with some of our own runs, where against Georgetown, against Providence, we just didn't. Against Purdue, we did and we won. Against Georgetown and Providence, we didn't, and we just got raced. So the fact that it's at home, the fact that I don't think Oklahoma's going to travel very well, the fact that I think that we probably have a little bit talent advantage is going to help us. But I mean, this year's team is pretty hard to predict.
And I mean, I think both Oklahoma and Texas at this point are used to playing in front of 2,500 people. So
11 people, yes, right.
Yeah, I don't know if the it's going to be much of a home court advantage. Whereas, you know, like Kansas would be like, what is this? What the hell? There's only 3,000 people here. Is this an exhibition?
Right.
So what you're telling me is not to expect to LSU Oklahoma. To LSU Oklahoma? No.
Oh, I hope we will. Yes. I mean, yeah, I guess that'd be nice if we did.
Right. Okay. Cool. The joke just went straight over the basketball guys' heads for a second. All right. Let's do some.
It's still going over it, for the record. It's way past.
LSU smashed Oklahoma in the college football playoff.
Oh.
Oklahoma
the what
got
now?
The not round ball. Got it. Yes.
The December Madness.
Basketball.
All right, let's get to everybody's favorite part of the show.
Heyo.
Pretend you're getting to know us. This pretend you're getting to know us is, what is your 2020 resolution? I know, super weak and very lazy, but we're doing it. All right, who wants to start here?
I'll start because I was going to be the lamest.
So got it.
I will turn 40 in April. So I was talking to Johnny about this last week or a couple weeks ago. I actually kind of feel like I'm going through a midlife crisis. And he and I were talking. He's like, well, what does that mean? And I said, well, I want to go back and do it over again. But I don't want to go back in my lifetime and like relive the great memories. I want to not be a douchebag. I want to undo the shitty things that I've done to people and the things that I've done that are awful. And in that same vein, my resolution this year is to have more patience with my son. My kiddo, Owen, is a lot like me. He's very impulsive. He's super good with people, very kind, but just a fucking douchebag. And I sure wish that when he had his weak moments that I could be a better dad. So all you dads out there, which I'm assuming at least a few of you are, be patient with your sons, be patient with your daughters, just love your kiddos and help me with that too. Cause man, when he does dumb shit, it just makes me really upset.
Johnny?
What? I'm gonna balance my checkbook. I don't do resolutions, man. I'm sorry. Like
information that would have been useful 2 hours ago.
Yeah, no, I just, look, here's the thing. If I want to do something, I'm going to do it. Like, I don't wait to January 1st, 2020 to start something, right? Like,
this is supposed to be a joke. Just come up with some shitty joke, Johnny.
All right, bounce my checkbook.
Cool, got it.
Thank you.
Will you? Speaking of balancing, what kind of balancing act are you looking for this year?
Oh, I'm also going to balance my checkbook. All right, cool. That was great. Good for you to know us.
My resolution is to kill Will's ice maker.
Mine?
No, I'm sorry. Tim's ice maker. I'm going to kill Tim's ice maker.
What did my ice maker ever do to you?
Yeah, that's true. I don't. Maybe I have to kill them both, because if I kill just his, he'll come to your place for ice. And we don't need that.
So, John, do you have any other resolutions that you've been thinking of?
No, I'm just gonna. I'm gonna wait for Tim to do something, and then I'm gonna make a comment about it. That's my resolution. Is just Tim does things, and I will make comments about them.
Are you gonna like follow him around? Is this like?
No, just
is this like that one picture convenient of the girl who was walking and the guy who's playing the trumpet into the back of her head?
No, it's strictly going to be during this. Like I got shit going on, man. So I'm not going to follow him.
I got shit going on, man.
Yeah, hang around his douchebag kid? Are you kidding?
I'm all trying right to be nicer.
You're making it really hard. All right. My resolution is to not try. The reason being,
oh, okay.
Really? So, why, Will?
Yeah, what's the
your resolutions never come true. You always fail at them.
Oh no, my poor
so
son.
If my resolution is to not try, and to be really bad at things,
did you just galaxy brain this?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That's the idea. Is I'm gonna reverse psychology myself here.
Shit, that's deep.
It'll be
bro.
Like
shit.
But you know, now that I've spoken into existence, it's probably not going to happen. It's like kind of your birthday wish, sort of thing.
But Will, are you just going to neg yourself? Is that basically what this
is? No, that's basically the idea. Is I'm gonna red pill myself.
Okay.
Until basically
hook 'em.
That's the idea.
And that's how we'll join 4chan.
All right.
Oh, no.
All right. That was an interesting pretend you're getting to know us. Not our best. Probably not our worst.
I give it a solid B minus.
Tim, what do you think?
D plus.
You were wrong. It's Drayton Whiteside. But y'all, thank you for pretending we are football for the past hour. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter at Bitter White Guy and at Barking Carnival and here.
And?
Did I miss something? Am I somewhere? I'm on Pretend We're Football.
And?
The internet.
And? I'm just so confused. All right. Johnny, where in the world is Timothy Preston?
So not a lot of people know this, but Tim is actually, he's a very far left Democrat in practice, but he lives in Iowa. So, during the holiday season, he ends up, putting together a 1/3 scale, nativity scene, but he's also trying to bring people over to his side, so the nativity scene, which is literally 1/3 the size of a manger, so it takes up, like, most of his front yard, because he's poor, and his house is small, and his yard is small. But it's lovingly built, and he puts together a nativity scene with all of his favorite Democratic candidates, who pretty much have all dropped out at this point. Like, the three wise men were Cory Booker, Tulsi Gabbard, and Mike Bloomberg. Joseph is Beto O'Rourke. Jesus is obviously Julian Castro. And the Virgin Mary is Marianne Williamson. So he's been taking that down because it's now January, but it has generated a lot of publicity, quite a few angry letters to the editor of his local newspaper. But he's probably going to do it again next year with Senate candidates or something.
Most comfortable in the paint, Tim?
No, right in their fucking face. Actually, I took a quiz the other day, and Andrew Yang is who I am closest to. Johnny, Andrew Yang. But I guess he's my number one now, so.
And Tim?
Yeah?
Where can we find you?
InsideTexas.com and on Twitter, InsideTexasHoop, no S. I think I tweeted like 11 times in the last week, which is close to a record.
Look at that.
Like 9 of them were replies, but yes.
Yeah. Does that not count? I guess I don't know for sure.
Johnny, do you want to do the honors of asking Tim about the b-ball court?
I'm pretty sure right now he's most comfortable yakking into a bucket somewhere outside the 3-point line.
I will show you which bucket right there, gentlemen.
Ooh, that's
there
really,
it is.
Really great for the podcast, Tim. Thanks so much, man.
It's a kind of rectangular bucket. It's got rounded curves.
Even better. Thank you for describing a bucket.
A lot of dry puke in that particular bucket. But I had some people kind of insinuate that I got sick because of New Year's. I think that anyone's a true fan of the show knows that a little hard drinking is not going to get me down, am I right? So it was a stomach bug. It was a stomach bug. So
Tim, basketball court?
Most comfortable on the perimeter from three. But like if you ask me, like my peak comfort is inside with the big boys. But if I had to choose where the comfort is at its absolute most, like the ultimate, it's right in your fucking face, guys.
You guys can find us and our other shows on the Horsecast channel. It's the Horsecast channel on any podcasting platform like Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Horsecast. On that note, take care for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.